Are we on the air, Clint? Are we on the air?
Are we recording now?
We're recording now?
I think we're recording.
Is it time to get started?
Let's roll.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming to you live from the Channel 9 studios in Microsoft Campus.
Yeah, Redmond.
I am so excited to be here today. I can't even, it's just like bubbling out of my head right now. Actually, that's my head cold.
You look like you're on cloud 9.
Exactly.
Get it?
Exactly. That's a pretty funny joke. So why are we here today? Well, this is another episode that we have on our interview with an MVP channel. So we've been dark for a little while because Clint and I have actually been traveling around with the MVP Days Community Roadshow. So last month, at around this time, we had a chance to go on a 3-city roadshow. We covered Vancouver, Calgary, and Edmonton. And we had a chance to talk to IT pros about some really cool stuff. And so our roadshow that we have, I'm really pleased to announce, Clint, has been expanded.
Has it?
It has.
Oh, boy.
So we've taken it for the first time ever. We're going to actually be hitting Eastern Canada now.
Eh?
Yes, that's right. We're going to go get some maple syrup. We're going to play some hockey. And we're going to have a lot of fun with this roadshow. So our dates that we have right now are February 29th in Toronto. We're still working on a venue because we're not sure as to the sizing that we're going to need. We're expecting an incredible turnout for the Eastern Swing. We had over 700 people register for our show that we had for the Western Swing. We're going to be doing Ottawa on March 2nd, and we're going to be doing Montreal on March 4th. And stay tuned, everyone. Super Crystal is going to kill me for this. But we may be thinking about doing some U.S. dates now as well.
Oh, really? U.S.?
Did I just announce that?
Wow.
Is that announced?
I mean, because for me, I attended the Western Canadian Road Tour, and it was amazing, right? Just to get to meet and interact with all the different, folks that you don't traditionally get to chat with on a daily basis, right? So, I mean, it was great to get out there and really evangelize the community and share with everybody, what's going on from a Microsoft perspective with the latest and greatest with Hyper-V and the new comings with Windows Server 2016, right? We had a lot of great turnout, right? So it's exciting to hear that you're bringing it back for the East Coast.
Absolutely.
As well as for the States.
Yes, and so we also recently had a chance to work together at the VeeamON conference in Las Vegas.
Yep.
What a fantastic show that was. That was probably one of my favorite conferences of the entire year, Clint. The content was great, the speakers were great, and for the first time that I've seen, and I'm a virtualization guy.
Right.
So, you know what, Clint? I think we actually might have forgotten something. We might want to do some intros. Oh, sorry, everyone. That's okay. We'll step back a bit here. We'll do some intros. So, I'm Dave Kuula.
And I'm Clint Wyckoff. By day, I work for Veeam Software as a Microsoft Product Strategy Evangelist on the Global Product Strategy team there. By night, I'm a community guy, right? So I'm from born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. There we have a user group community that we started up that we call V Brisket, right? So we get together on a regular basis, chat about virtualization, data center technology, storage, pretty much anything that involves what's called, the quote-unquote modern data center, right? And, we drink beer, smoke meat, and talk about tech. What more fun could there be?
I'm there. The next one that you have, if you offer me smoke meat and beer, I'm there. And talk virtualization.
Right.
So I have to, before we get into our session today, which is super cool, because Clint's going to actually talk to us a little bit today about NanoServer and how this is going to really change the virtualization game. But before we get into that, I have to tell you something that was very, very cool and a little story from the VeeamON conference. That's kind of the first time something like this has ever happened. And Veeam started a program called the Veeam Vanguard program.
We did, yes.
And so for the first time that I've ever personally seen, we had Hyper-V MVPs and VMware V-Experts and other industry experts all in the same room collaborating for one unified goal.
From around the world, not to mention.
Yes.
Right? So we have, right now, as Dave mentioned, right, so earlier this year we launched the Veeam Vanguard program, which is really it's our evangelistic program. Really, the folks in the industry that best represent the Veeam brand were handpicked based on, a lot of different things. But ultimately, what it comes down to is the folks that best represent, the Veeam brand are out there chatting about it on a regular basis. So as Dave mentioned last week at VeeamON 2015, which was the second iteration of the the world's premier data center conference and availability event that we have. It was in Vegas, as Dave mentioned, but we got this inaugural group of vanguards together. They're, like I said, there's around 31 of them from around the world. And as Dave mentioned also, right, so it includes not only Hyper-V experts, but, you know, VMware V experts and folks from the OpenStack. So that's the nice thing about, you know, the ecosystem is bringing everybody together and networking. And
we had so many good conversations, just
right.
So many good general conversations about kind of where the industry is going and, you know, kind of try to look into that crystal ball and see what's happening.
Right.
And so I think we can probably get started with our session here.
Sure.
So why don't you talk to us a little bit, Clint, about, you know, what you wanted to bring to the session today?
Right. So there's, you know, earlier this year at Ignite, Microsoft made a lot of announcements around Windows Server 2016 and what's coming. And one of the most popular sessions that was in Chicago that they chatted, right? So Jeffrey Snover, for those of you folks that aren't familiar with him, he's a technology fellow, really leading up the Windows Server group, right? And a lot of the emerging technologies that come out of that, right?
Yep.
So, you know, Jeffrey presented at Ignite and really launched this long idea and years of development they've had with this minimalistic server footprint, what they're calling Nano Server, aka, you know, for those of you that are on the in, right, the code name Tuva is what they called it internally.
And what does that mean? What does Tuva actually mean?
That's a great question. Do you know the answer to it? Because this guy doesn't off the top of his head.
So I think Tuva is actually like one of the smallest either countries or places in Russia. I don't know the exact details around it, but it's like something really small,
okay,
like country-wise.
Well, that would make sense because that's the whole premise behind of what Nano Server is,
yeah,
right? Is this minimalistic server footprint. So over the course of the next little bit, not only are we going to dive into, you know, the specific problems that Nano Server is really set out to solve and kind of what the use cases are, but we're also going to give you a live demo of how you would deploy this within an environment.
So this isn't a rehearsed demo, just so
you know. No, this is 100% live.
On Interview with an MVP, when we come live to the Channel 9 studios, and this is for you, the viewers that are out there, we like to introduce a little bit of risk into each of these presentations that
right.
we do. Everything that we do is one take, as you know from the other videos that you watched, unscripted, and it's just raw content that we have.
That's the best way to do it, right? Because it has to be real, and you know, so that's really what the, you know, that's what it's all about, right?
Exactly.
So without, you know, kind of further ado, let's, ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's do this.
So, you know, Nano Server is as I mentioned, right? So there's a lot of cool things that Nano Server addresses. And if we kind of think back on what the issues that traditional Windows Server has, right? So Hyper-V servers, even traditional workloads that are running SQL Server, things like that, right?
Yep.
Whenever you go to patch those and take those systems down, those reboots and that system downtime really affects the business.
And that's actually a really big problem, Clint, in the fact that, you know, those outages and those planned maintenance windows
right.
become a really big problem for a lot of organizations.
Right. So if we can eliminate the amount of reboots and the amount of time that servers are down for patching and for, you know, issues and maintenance and stuff, right? So that's really one of the core fundamental pillars or capabilities that Nano Server is really set out to solve, trying to minimize that the impact that reboots have in the environment, right?
Well, and even if you take a look at that from a percentage perspective, Clint, when we take a look at patching those server workloads, even if you can shave off like 10%, 20, 30, 50% of the required patches, whatever that number ends up being, that's a significant amount of soft administrative savings that you're going to take and that you're going to have in that infrastructure. It's not even necessarily going to be something that you're going to see on a day-to-day basis, but that's going to be something that you're going to take and that you're going to have a large return over,
sure.
over a course of extended
period of time.
Right. Exactly.
So, you know, the other ultimate item that Nano Server is really set out to, if you look at the size of deployment and the time to deployment, you know, a traditional Windows Server, if I wanted to virtualize that or even run it in a physical environment, right, traditionally you would stand up, you know, a VM, and to that VM you would attach VHDs, right? Traditionally, you know, say 40 gig VHDs,
yep.
right? That takes a lot of space, even if you're using dynamic disk, right? So whenever I go out there and deploy Windows Server, traditionally it takes, what, maybe 10, 15 gigabytes worth of space, right? If I can shrink that down you know, to a much, much smaller footprint. It's a lot more effective on my storage provisioning on the backside. I have to purchase less storage. It's a lot more effective to use. But then also, you know, storing those virtual machines, there's a lot of duplicate data in there, right? So now I've got a lot of wasted space. And
and so how big is too big for a server image? Like a traditional server image that you'd have for a GUI-based image, that could be in the gigs of size. So like you could be like 5 gigs in size very easily once you add a few things into that image, right? Well, and so what does that look like from a nano perspective, Clint?
So we'll actually dive into that a little bit further. I have a nice graphical representation of kind of what it looks like traditionally, but then also what, you know, really what the space savings that nano server brings to the table. But, you know, one of my, why do you think that, you know, those traditional server images are so large? What do you think would play into that?
Well, so I think the problem is that as administrators and as people that have been working with Windows in a GUI for a long time, it's too easy to just add additional things into there.
Right.
And it's actually kind of falling outside of best practices for a Hyper-V server. Because on a Hyper-V server, you're only supposed to install core Hyper-V roles on there. But I can't tell you, Clint, how many times I go to a customer environment and I see other things that are on there.
Right.
Just because it looks like a Windows server, behaves like a Windows server, can install stuff like a Windows server can, I find it's too tempting for administrators. Like I'll find like a PDF reader on there. I'll find Word on my servers. I'll find weird stuff on there or tools or things like that.
Right.
That stuff should not be on your core hypervisors, people. Take it off.
Well, what happens is, you know, the administrators, they create what they call the quote unquote gold image, right? And regardless of what the role that the server that they're deploying serves in its life, right? You know, they deploy this gold image. And as you mentioned, it can have a lot of bloatware on it.
Yeah.
And a lot of additional roles and features that aren't required to really do the job. So,
or old tools, because it is an image, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, the last component of this is really minimalizing the attack surface and the footprint and really shrinking down the amount of resources that are required to run these workloads, right? Only installing the roles and features that are required. That's going to give us a lot better virtual machine density in the environment. I can fit more VMs on that Hyper-V host that really serve only that purpose. You know, and the other side of it is, you know, did you ever notice whenever you go into Windows Server and you try to add additional role or feature, it doesn't ask you for any type of installation media, right? So it has that that side-by-side directory there within the core Windows, right? So it's got all the cab files and DLLs that are required to install these roles and features. So whenever we remove those out, right, not only am I shrinking down the size of the VM, right, there's less duplicate data in the environment, but then also, you know, I don't have the opportunity to run those additional features and roles that aren't required for the server's job and the server's purpose, right?
So we got faster install time.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've got a reduced footprint, and we've got, for all intents and purposes, a more secure computing environment.
That's probably the ultimate piece, because there's a lot of noise in the industry, and there's been, you know, a lot of retailers and a lot of different folks have been hacked lately, right?
Yeah.
And if I can decrease the attack footprint that my compute platform has within the virtualized environment, and even from a hypervisor perspective, right? If I can shrink that down, I'm reducing the size, the attack footprint, the number of patches that are required, and ultimately making the environment more secure to serve its purpose, which is, you know, serve the business, right?
Well, absolutely, and for those of you that are out there. And you know, working with these branch office scenarios, mm-hmm. because in a previous life you actually had a lot of experience dealing, working as an administrator for a retailer,
right?
That had, you know, thousands of branch locations across the United States and kind of North America. How would Nano change the game for you guys today? Because Nano Server wasn't available at the time when you guys were, you know, rolling out your infrastructure, right?
Right.
Would this be something that you guys would look at for those kind of remote branch offices, not only just your data center?
Right. So, I mean, it serves a great place in the core data center, if you would call, you know, the mothership. But then also, you know, being able to have these extremely secure remote branch office locations within, you know, their own little quote-unquote data center where they're serving the purpose of Hyper-V, or even, you know, having a failover cluster there where I've got my Hyper-V nodes. So I think that's a great a use case for it, right?
And I think I'd also like to dispel a little bit of a myth around NanoServer as well, because as people are learning these new technologies, Clint, I find that a lot of people are making a direct comparison with NanoServer to VMware ESXi, the free VMware hypervisor that's right. available. And NanoServer can do a lot more than just Hyper-V.
Absolutely.
It can act as, you know, a full workload.
It can.
And so that's something that, you know, a lot of people don't really understand. Now, there are some limitations
sure.
in there, because it does have a smaller footprint. Some of the limitations in there are, for example, Windows installer core binaries are not included in there.
Correct.
So you can't just take and you can't just install anything.
Right. But one of the, we'll go through this, but one of the, so whenever you actually go to deploy NanoServer, as I mentioned, I'll show you this in the live demo, right, is the ability to install some of the legacy .NET features with what they call reverse forwarders, right? So a lot of my legacy applications will still be able to run, you know, as a platform on top of NanoServer. And there's other things, as Dave mentioned, right? So it can serve the purpose of scale-out file server. It can serve the purpose of a Hyper-V node. It can serve the purpose of, you know, running a Windows Defender and scale-out file server, right? Initially.
That's so cool that you can actually do all of that in such a small footprint.
Yep.
So as we take a look at kind of moving forward here, Clint, I think one more kind of key note that I just want to bring up here mm-hmm. is that the Microsoft product teams, and specifically Ben Armstrong and his team on Hyper-V, have worked really hard to unify the Hyper-V base set of binaries. So when you have a Hyper-V install mm-hmm. on Windows 10, you have a Hyper-V install on Windows Server GUI Edition in Core, in Nano, it's all the same core code. It is exactly the same across any of those platforms.
Right.
And so that's also really important to understand, because a lot of people think that, you know, you're losing features for having to go into NanoServer. Now, in the current release for, you know, the TP3 that's
right.
available.
TP3 is available
for
right
Server
now.
2016.
Yep.
There are still a couple limitations that they're working through.
Right. It's a technology preview.
Exactly. But still some very cool stuff.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the evolution of this stuff.
Right, so I mean, if you kind of look back at the course and the places that the Windows Server has come, right, so if we look back, you know, traditional Windows Server back in the NT days, Server 2000, 2003, right, everything had a full-blown user interface, okay? Kind of folks get used to clicking around, pointing around, and they get addicted to the GUI, if you will, right? So last week at VeeamLine, Jeffrey gave a presentation about NanoServer, right?
Yep.
And you know, one of the things that he related the GUI to is GUI's like heroin, right? So once you have it, you got to have more of it, and folks get addicted to those types of things, right? So
how I explain this to my customers, Clint, if you can control C, control V, you can manage Hyper-V in a GUI.
But if you look at the way that things have evolved, you know, introducing with Windows Server 2008 R2, kind of the minimal core user interface, right? So you could go in there and you could still art remote desktop to it. You could manage it using Server Manager and remote management tools, but you could still get in there and do a lot of things locally on that operating system. But ultimately, the purpose of that was to run virtual machines on top of it, as we can see here in the presentation. But then, you know, moving forward, as part of the install with Server 2012, 2012 R2, you know, Microsoft gave you the options to, you can actually remove the GUI and add the GUI back in on demand if you wanted to. So if there was some tasks that you weren't familiar with using PowerShell or remote management tools, you could go back and you could kind of revert back and forth, right? So, but Server Core really stripped all that away. And really the only purpose that served was to run as a Hyper-V node or a part of a failover cluster, right?
Yeah. Well, and coming from the Hyper-V world as a Hyper-V MVP, Clint, I think what we have to start thinking about is how we're going to train ourselves to learn and to manage on the kind of newer platforms that are available.
Right.
And so in your head, in your mind, you have to start preparing yourself for the future. And in doing so, you have to think Nano first where mm-hmm. possible. If Nano is not going to fit, then look at Server Core. And as a last resort, you should be looking at the GUI version.
Right.
And the reason, there's so many reasons in behind that we've already started to talk to about that, but that's in your head, that's the type of thinking that you have to have, and kind of the forward thought leadership
right.
that people are looking for from us.
Well, developers, you know, they should really be writing the code within their environments to run on non-user interface type environments, right? Really kind of evolving this more of a platform type approach, right? And if you want to leverage user interface type environments, right, that's great for desktop infrastructures, that's great for, you know, Windows 10, those types of environments. So that's really the way that, that things are kind of evolving, right? So if really kind of diving into it a little bit further, we touched on it briefly there for a while, but really what Nano Server is it's a 64-bit only deployment that's available within Windows Server 2016. It's a headless operation, meaning the only way that you can manage Nano Server is remotely, you know, using Server Manager third-party tools. There's going to be a web interface that you can manage Nano with as well.
That's very cool.
But then also, you know, remote PowerShell. That's the probably the biggest piece of this. So I think for folks that might not be too familiar with PowerShell, definitely that's going to be something that you're going to want to dive into a little bit deeper. And there's a lot of free resources out there that you can get into on that.
Microsoft Virtual Academy.
Yeah, MVA. Tons. So aka.ms/MVA is the Microsoft Virtual Academy. But, you know, Nano Server, as I mentioned, really is set out to solve a couple of different challenges we talked about earlier. But the main ones that we're going to chat with here is the compute, being a Hyper-V node, storage scale file server, the clustering capability.
Oh, yeah,
well.
Full failover clustering capabilities inside of Nano.
But then also, if you wanted to run Nano Server as a virtual machine, there's full support for all the guest operating system drivers and integration services to run Nano as a VM.
Well, and let's just stop there and let's think about that. The ability to run Nano Server as a VM. Microsoft just released nested virtualization for Hyper-V.
They did.
It's not available yet in the server platform, but it's going to be coming. And so what's really driving the need and the requirement for this, Clint, is Azure. And so as customers spin up workloads inside of Azure and they're trying to build their data center in a box, sure, and being able to run nested virtualization inside of Azure, those workloads that run inside, we want to try to minimize their footprint as much as possible so that we can maximize that virtual machine that we're already buying inside of that hosted provider.
Sure.
Not just for even a lab environment or anything else like that. That small footprint in a nested fashion, it just makes all kinds of sense.
Well, it gives you a lot more flexibility, right? So one of the, as Dave mentioned, one of the, excuse me, the core fundamental items there with being able to run nested virtualization, ultimately running those hypervisors nested within Azure, but then also, you know, the full support for, you know, running the containers, right?
Yes.
On top of that too.
Well, and containers are kind of morphing off into their own discussion. I think people are just still trying to figure out, you know, what the applicable use cases are.
Sure.
Because with any generation one technology that even a company like Microsoft picks up, there's a kind of a big learning curve even internally inside on the product teams, right? And so there's really cool things we can do, but I think people are still really learning and evolving. And I think you're going to see some really neat solutions that are coming out even from that containers world.
Absolutely. Yep. So that's one of the other you know, core fundamentals that nested virtualization, but then also Nano Server. So, you know, earlier you asked me about footprint within the data center and sizing.
How big is this thing?
Right. So, you know, traditional Windows Server GUI was, you know, 10 plus gigabytes worth of space if you were using maybe a, you know, a dynamic disk that would automatically grow.
Yeah, and that seems about right.
Yep. You know, core, if you just do the base install with core, with the Hyper-V role, it's around 4 gigabytes worth of space. Nano Server brings it down to 400 megabytes. Megabytes.
So what does that do for your install time? Does it install pretty fast, Clint?
Yeah, to say the least. It's around, I would say, what, 35, 40, 50 seconds?
50 seconds?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Really? Because I used to charge by the hour to install Hyper-V. So I need to start charging by the second to install Nano.
Until people see this video.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's a game changer, right? So really, you know, what do you think headless means, Dave?
Well, so this could go in so many different directions. In my mind, what I'm visualizing is I'm visualizing somebody riding along on a horse and kind of holding their head.
Sure.
That could be headless.
The headless horseman.
I think you've got that graphical
got that
representation.
Yeah.
Yes. For me, headless has always been the ability to remotely manage servers without a keyboard and mouse. That is the definition of headless for me.
Yes.
Take your keyboard and mouse away from a server and have to manage it totally over the network, totally remote.
Right. So the only thing that you can do within Nano Server, the only thing that you can do is set an IP address. That's literally the only thing that you can do from a console.
Yep.
Technology Preview 3, that's the only way that you can get to it is with what they call the EMC or the Emergency Management Console. CP4, I understand, is going to bring out a web-based portal where you can manage Nano.
Other third-party partners that are out there, like yep. Five9 Soft, are actually doing development work to build that into their Hyper-V manager.
So awesome.
Their Five9
that's
manager.
Fantastic.
So that's pretty cool.
You can use Management Console, MMC, you can use Server Manager, you can use Remote PowerShell. There's a lot of different ways that you can get at and manage Nano Server.
Yeah.
So,
PowerShell Direct?
PowerShell Direct. PowerShell Direct's pretty, that's pretty slick.
Yes. That is one of the coolest new features
yep.
that I've seen, and that's one of the things I'm really waiting for as soon as the 2016 launch goes GA.
Yeah, so for those of you folks that might not be familiar with what PowerShell Direct is, it's the ability to actually connect to a virtual machine, a VM guest, over the VM host bus.
Yes.
Right? So not only do I... Traditionally, you require network connectivity to connect and manage a virtual machine,
which can be sporadic, especially if you're trying to remote in or assign credentials.
Yep.
I've got a reliance typically on DNS, Active Directory infrastructure, stuff like that. So that new concept with PowerShell Direct, it's allowed me to rewrite almost all of my Hyper-V scripts that I've got.
Really? So you're going to have to change your bag of tricks?
I am. They're still a lot smaller now, a lot less code. Just
all
like
right.
Nano. So now I have Nano PowerShell code.
Another bag. So I think at this point we're ready to dive into
it. Yeah, can you show us a demo of this? This would be really cool.
Let's jump into it. So
all right.
If I switch over here.
Yeah, I'm super excited to see this demo. Clint's really been selling up this demo for me, so.
I have, haven't I?
Yeah.
So, if we go out here to my remote machine, so you can see here that I've got an ISO image mounted to my Windows server.
Yep.
Within here, now this is TP3 that I got off of the Microsoft website, right?
Yep. So
technology preview.
Anybody can grab this today, right? So
yep.
if they wanted to actually see your demos and go through the stuff, they can see it today, right?
Right.
Okay.
And this is the only way that the Nano Server is deployable. So within here, as I drilled into my Nano Server directory, we can see that there's a couple of different things that are available in here. One of those being the convert-Windows image PowerShell script along with the new Nano Server image.ps1.
Okay? Yes.
So what I want to do here is I'm going to copy these two files back to a source directory on my local PC. So if I go out to the C drive here, you can see that I've already done this. I've got my two PowerShell scripts present. Because what we want to do is we're going to reference these as part of our deployment, right?
Yep.
So what we're going to do is we're going to leverage the packages that are available within Nano Server on that ISO image, and we're going to essentially build a custom VHD just for our environment so we can deploy this.
Oh, very
cool. Pretty cool stuff.
And right? Then we could take and we could easily clone that by copying that VHD, and we could spin up more Nano Servers.
You can't. So you're actually, as part of this demo here, we're going to deploy four Nano Servers with the Hyper-V role, with the failover clustering role, as well as all of my guest operating system drivers and reverse forwarders packages.
Shut the front door. That's a pretty cool demo.
And automatically set the administrator password.
There's
other things you can do, right? So you could automatically bring those up, join them to a domain if you had the domain blob present, right? So then you can use like bcdedit to get into those. And automatically add them to the domain.
And so what you're really trying to say is that you brought your A game here today.
A game is always present with this guy.
Nice.
This guy
nice.
Only has.
Now
A game.
I noticed some stuff in here. It's called V Brown Bag as part of your script. Could you maybe explain? I think you did some of these demos at the VMon conference, right? And they had like a V Brown Bag theater there.
Right.
Because people might be wondering, you know, what that is.
Right. So jumping. I did a recorded version. So V Brown Bag is it's a community, right, that broadcasts out over YouTube, and they have a pretty big following. But as part of VMon, we had the V Brown Bag folks there, and I did a recorded version of this demo.
Okay.
But
cool.
this is not recorded, Dave. This is live.
Are you sure?
Yeah, we're sure. So the first thing that you can see here is I've got my PowerShell script where I'm going to build my Nano image. The first thing that I'm going to do is I'm actually going to change my directory out to my Nano Server source directory that I've got. And we're going to leverage something within PowerShell that's known as dot sourcing.
Okay.
Okay. So within these base PowerShell scripts that Microsoft provides on the Nano Server, the media, exactly, yep. Right? So there's functions in here that we want to persist throughout this entire PowerShell session, which is, you know, essentially one PowerShell script. So we're going to dot reference these two specific scripts. Okay. And you can see here that we're going to first leverage the new Nano Server. I'm going to point to my base path, which is C Nano Server. But this base path, if we switch back, gets populated with all of the source packages and things that were present on that ISO image. And that happens via the first time that you run this with the dot media, right? Mm-hmm. So if we come down here, we can see that new Nano Server image dash media path pointing to that D drive. And what that's going to do is that's going to copy off the Nano Server images to my source directory, right? Or my base path that we're referencing down here. So I've already done this once.
Okay.
So that media path switch is only required the first time that you deploy this. and then ultimately, we're going to spit out to our target directory, which I have as C brown bag. And I'm going to include my guest drivers, reverse forwarders, as I mentioned, allows you to run some of the legacy .NET type applications that might have been deployed that in DLL files that aren't present within Nano directly.
Yep.
But then also the compute being the Hyper-V role, clustering being Windows failover clustering. Give it a name, set an admin password, and you can see here that the local username is going to be vbrownbag, and that's what the password is going to be. So if we go down here, right, so if I get rid of my comment here in the front, you can see whenever I actually go out here and deploy this, I've got a lot of different switches and things that are available to me, okay? The first of which being scale out file server, which is the storage role, compute being the Hyper-V, clustering as well as Windows Defender for anti-malware,
yep,
on my Hyper-V node, and as well as OEM drivers. So the OEM drivers package is going to include, if I wanted to run this on, say, for instance, a physical
box,
right?
Yeah.
So now, you know, in the example that we're going to show here just in a second, whenever I run this, is we're going to deploy Nano as a virtual machine on top of a Hyper-V host,
yep,
right? But if I wanted to install Nano on, say, you know, a bare metal piece of hardware that, say, has, you know, 192 gigabytes worth of memory, dual quad core, now I've got this massive headless install, right, that I can jam as many virtual machines on there.
And do you know where that actually becomes really important, Clint? Because I do a lot of work with OEM vendors, where they'll actually take and build custom appliances for Hyper-V. There's something called a DOM, and it's called a dongle on a motherboard. It's basically like a SATA dongle that sits, mm-hmm, like right onto the motherboard. And so we could actually deploy Nano Server right onto that dongle on the motherboard. And what it would do is it would free up all of that JBOD space that we would have on the front of that chassis for storage, you know,
sure,
storage spaces direct, you know, we're having a lot of new discussions around hyper-converged technologies, mm-hmm, and stuff like that. And so you want to keep that footprint as small as possible. So I'm super excited to see what this is going to bring and kind of the changes, and especially a lot of the work that I'm doing with the OEMs,
right,
building solutions.
I mean, if you think about it, it's turning the entire compute platform and the Hyper-V host that we're running, it's simply just a commodity, right? It's rinse and repeat. So if I need to scale out quickly, if you look at the definition that NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, has for compute, the number one definition there of what they call cloud computing is elasticity, right?
Yes.
Being able to scale out and scale back quickly and on demand. This just falls right in line with that.
Do you know, even more importantly for this, Clint, is that I'm an operational guy. You're an operational guy. You've spent a lot of time in the production data centers, and so have I. Things break. Nodes break. They need to be fixed.
Yep.
We need to reimage servers. And so what I'm really excited to see, like what this is going to do for the future, is how fast I can remediate a broken server.
Sure.
Because something could go wrong on the motherboard. I might have to swap that out. I might have to, you know, for whatever reason, my OS blows up and I have to reimage and I have to basically reset that node back to what it was. I'm really excited because now, within a matter of minutes, I can rerun my scripts on there and I don't have a huge provisioning time. I don't have to wait hours to patch this thing afterwards.
Right, because it's only going to have what it, yeah, needs, right? And there's the minimal amount of security patches and critical vulnerabilities that are available because there's less things to patch, right?
Yeah.
There's no user interface, right?
Exactly. So should we jump back? Should we jump, yep, back and take a look and see what's going to happen?
Absolutely. Let's jump back to the demo. So here, we're ready to, you can see we're going to do a couple of copies, and basically we're going to deploy these four virtual machines out, give them a name, startup IP address, startup memory, and attach it to a specific virtual switch on my Hyper-V node and power them up. And then we'll get the IP address, and then we'll be able to remotely manage them. So without further ado, as long as the demo gods are with us today, and they should be.
We made some sacrifices. Right? So Clint, there's a few less guys on your team today, right?
Yes, absolutely. So we're gonna run this, and if we switch back over here to my C directory, we're immediately going to see that my my vbrownbag1 folder gets created. And if we move this over, we should be able to see that now it's going through and it's actually adding the packages specific to this VHD, this nano server image that I want to create, right? So that was the compute role, yep. The failover clustering role, as well as the driver support that we added.
While your script is running, Clint, just one really quick question for you. Are you going to make your script available to our viewers so that they could do this in their own labs as well?
Yeah, we can do that.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm happy to share the community.
We'll give a link at the end of the presentation or at the end of our episode here. And so we'll give you guys the code base so you can try this out.
Yep, we can do that.
Awesome.
So right now it's going through and it's dismounting the image, and then you can see that our make directory went there. So now I've got, you know, my 1, 2, 3, and 4. And if we switch over to my Hyper-V manager, we'll see that my VMs are going to start getting added to this Hyper-V node. They'll power on, and as they power on, I'll show you what the emergency management console looks like. We'll log into one locally.
Right on.
So you can see there that my 4 VMs within my Hyper-V manager now.
Oh, so they're actually already turning on.
They're turning on, right? So now we can see here.
I think you might have just run out of RAM.
My server ran out of memory. My Hyper-V host is out of memory. But my VMs came up. I run a pretty hot environment here. So if we log into this with administrator.
What probably happened is I went onto Clint's laptop before the demo and was playing on his laptop and probably ran his laptop out of memory. That's probably what actually ended up happening there.
I think I set the password to V. So as I said again, this is 100% live, but fortunately enough for us, I set my
uppercase B's.
Uppercase. So this is going to be drawing.
Have to make sure that we've got some nice complex passwords running in there. So somebody actually mentioned something to me that if you don't see some red in a live demo, then it's not really a live demo.
This it doesn't get any more live than this. So what you can see here is we've got the EMC or the Emergency Management Console. And one of the things we talked about earlier was, you know, the code name Tuva that we have, and we can see there is this
yep.
is obviously Technology Preview 3 that Microsoft has available. It came up. I didn't statically set an IP address as part of the process, but you can do that. So within my environment, we grab DHCP. So now I can actually come over here and run my, if we clear the screen down here so folks can see what's going on, run my script. I go out there and I get the IP addresses of my VMs that got one, right? So you can see here 214, 121. So now we can actually connect to these remotely using either PowerShell, Server Manager, add them to a cluster, the whole nine yards, right? So I've got essentially four nano servers that are ready to rock. Within a matter of minutes.
So I don't know if you guys, as the viewers, were actually timing that. If you guys had stopped watch, you know, what was going on there. But within a matter of minutes, not even minutes, we had 4 more Hyper-V servers ready to go, 3 of which turned on. We had one that didn't turn on just because of lack of memory, but that's okay.
Right.
But that's pretty cool.
Right. So the one thing that I want to point out here, so this nano in my source directory here, is 415 megabytes. So this doesn't have the additional packages that I required, right? The compute, the failover clustering, the OEM
yep.
drivers, all that stuff, right? So if we actually switch over here to my vbrownbag virtual machine and expand this window out, we can see that with these additional components that I requested as part of my script, right, my size is around 554 megabytes. Megabytes. So it's pretty small.
With 500 floppies, you could get the same thing too.
Just chain them together in an array.
We might be dating ourselves here, Clint, because a lot of our viewers that are watching this may not even know what floppy disks are anymore.
That could be the case too, Dave. But yeah, so that fast, that quick, that easy, right?
absolutely amazing to actually see that in action. And, you know, Clint, to take the time and to put a really cool demo together like that for the show, that's absolutely incredible to actually see that in action.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing how fast you can do this. So if we just took a second to kind of to wrap things up, right? You know, what were your takeaways?
My takeaways were the minimal footprint for Nano, the ease of deployment.
Right.
Are going to be probably the two biggest ones for me. And the third one is the Hyper-V core code base is the same across any Hyper-V version that you have.
Right.
So if you've got a GUI version of Windows Server 2016, if you've got the core version, if you've got the Nano version, it doesn't matter. When you install those core binaries, that core code base, even on Windows 10, that core code base is going to be the same.
Right.
And so that's really important, because as developers work on this, as we move this into production, as we take and as we use this in the field, that standardization is huge for us.
Yep. And you actually brought up a good point. So Windows 10, you mean I can run Hyper-V on Windows 10?
Yes, absolutely. So the Hyper-V core binaries are there, and they're available for you in Windows 10.
It was actually present in Windows 8 too.
It was.
In 8.1.
It was.
But actually, in the next session we're going to chat about is some home lab type stuff, right,
yes,
that folks can use. And that's a great way to leverage resources that you already have, being the desktop operating system for a home lab, right?
Yes.
So we'll get into that. But as you can see here, you know, TP3 offers a couple of different roles and features: compute, clustering, storage, you know, Windows Defender, anti-malware, driver support for both virtual environments as well as physical environments. And then you can see here, as we mentioned, Dave said, well, we're going to share out the script that I have here.
Our little gift for you, the viewers.
Absolutely. Free gift. Free to you.
Microsoft Virtual Academy.
Absolutely.
If you haven't been on there yet, make sure that you go check it out. There is tons of content available on the Virtual Academy. And Clint, we've got our contact information up here as well.
Yep.
Guys, thank you very much for taking the time to watch our episode today. And we look forward to seeing you in the next one.
Thanks a lot for having me, Dave. It's been
awesome.
Great.
Yes, thank you, Clint.